When is it too soon for me to put up Christmas stuff?
But that is a question.
Only you know the answer to that question.
Okay. As long as that's your answer, then I'm content with that answer.
I would say if it's what you have to do to take care of yourself.
It might be what I have to do to take care of myself, frankly.
Hey, man, hashtag self-care.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the word of the week.
No, I mean, I do agree with that.
I'm not doing any of that.
I'm being a very asshole. Not
I've been just letting...
I will say what I don't have
choices.
A lot of patience for is how many people will use the concept of self-care as, like, a defense for... Like,
eating like shit and like me and like not sleeping afterward?
No, just...
Cheeseburgers every day. It's the only thing that makes me feel good.
Self-care. Like, well, like, I'm not going to deal with X, Y, and Z things that I really do need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because self-care!
I'm not going to pay any of my taxes or bills.
Right.
Self-care. I need shoes.
That's treat yourself. That's different.
That's, I know. That is different. Oh, I do need shoes. God, what a dumb season we're approaching.
It is a dumb season, but it's... an excuse to buy more sweaters.
I have no real shoes anymore.
I have so many sweaters. I don't need more sweaters.
I had to get rid of sweaters. I need more sweaters.
Go to Target. That's where I got all my sweaters.
I'm going to go to Primark.
Or there, go there too. They have good sweaters.
Stop telling me what to do.
I don't like
go to
Primark.
Bed. Go
Primark
back to sleep.
Okay.
Your Primark stuff like falls apart.
Yes.
Not always.
I mean, the women's stuff certainly does.
But I mean, if you're going to go buy something decent.
Yeah. Pay the
most
extra money and it'll last longer.
What I have bought from... I've only had two things of theirs fall apart on me.
I bought a shirt.
I will say shrinkage is a problem here.
Yeah, that's an issue for me with long limbs. I gotta watch out for shrinkage.
You do have long rubbery limbs.
You know that shrinkage in a retail sense means
yes,
stealing. So have you been nipping some items from Primark there, Ravel?
No,
that, well, you can't because that.
How do you
like,
steal something that's so cheap?
I mean, it was a steal.
Practically a steal on its own.
Ooh, you should be doing their commercial.
Price is so low. It should be a crime.
No, you should come in dressed as like a criminal with like your striped shirt and like the
I know, I kind of picture like, with that accent, I kind of picture like a Cruella de Vil-esque figure, like with a cigarillo.
Long cigarette holder.
Yeah.
Oh, it's me. Dollar.
Some sort of
fucking.
Like email criminal overlord.
Fucking. Ooh.
And I love fucking over Primark with these deals.
Welcome to the newest episode of Why Did We Watch This? Aka, Why Watch? I am Lee Teriyaki Toss Delahanty.
And I am Brendan Bible Belch Drishler.
And I am Chris Wolfgang Chuck Ravel.
And we have a special guest as well. Returning special guest, introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Brendan Maui Chowie Nystead.
And Brendan's back with us to talk toys.
Yay! Yes.
Talking toys.
Talking toys.
Talking toys.
Talking toys with three boys.
I wish there was a thing that rhymed with boy that I could describe myself as.
Goy.
Goy? Yeah,
goy.
Practically.
Yeah.
With three boys and a goy. It would be better if, like, the three of us were Jewish
yeah.
and you were not. But,
yeah,
okay, we do what we can.
I think we are pretty clearly Gentile.
Okay, so before we get into this, did anyone actually get the recipe for the drink?
I
thought I can do it.
So the drink that we made is called Fight Fire with Marshmallows. It actually differed from the recipe we did last time because we could not find Absolute Apple in stores. So what we ended up doing was getting elderflower liqueur. It dyed it green. Absolute hibiscus with pomegranate and dyed it blue. And we layered them with the elderflower liqueur on the bottom, which is denser than the absolute hibiscus, which was blue on top. And then we had two miniature marshmallows floating on top of that. So it looked like rolling green hills, blue sky, and clouds.
It was really pretty to look at. And it was delicious.
Yeah.
I mean, did it look like that, though?
I think it looked pretty good like that.
So the first time I made this drink, we used a much heavier bottom liquor. And
right.
It had been, like, you could layer it much more thickly, so
right.
It was like a line.
But it looks... It
looked good.
The gradient effect that we did almost made it look more impressionistic, which I thought was fun.
Yeah, it was kind of blurry in between
yeah.
the two portions.
Which is sort of, like, blurry between, like, the lines between Childish
yeah.
Toy Wonder
so
and...
So a quick note on the preparation of this. To get the layering effect, you do have to figure out which alcohol is heavier.
Yes.
Just Google specific densities of alcohol know that vodka's always going to be on top because there's nothing in it. One more quick note on the layering
oh, yeah,
is
yeah,
that
yeah.
you have to to do it well, because it's going to muddle if you pour it in harshly, a good tip is to pour it on the back of a spoon and then into the drink, and then it should end up kind of like trickling down the glass and it'll just settle on top of the heavier thing.
This was also a shot, more or less, when we did this too. It is nothing but alcohol, so I don't recommend drinking more than like...
I mean, we had like two shots.
Yeah, two shots.
It was pretty good.
It was it burns you a little when you take it, but in a good way, in a way you should expect from vodka.
The way you should want to be burned.
Take it.
Like sexually?
Yeah.
We also had the sweetest of treats with that unicorn ice cream.
Yep, the unicorn ice cream mentioned, the aforementioned ice cream from the preview episode came out pretty well. I've made it 2 times in the past 3 days. I wasn't sure that I could pull it off.
It's really beautiful. It comes out looking like the dreamiest rainbow sherbet you've ever had, and it tastes so creamy, and it was perfect. Yep. I loved it.
Delicious.
Worth a try. If you can't cook for shit like I can, you can do this.
Yeah.
So just Google it, and it's pretty easy and delicious.
So you can cook for shit.
I can cook for shit.
Great.
And Brendan and I used it as a float with glasses of Moxie.
Yeah, that we did.
Which I've never had before, so this was a big day.
It's a real New England treat.
Was that a good combo?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Because Moxie's a little more bitter, and it really, like, nicely combated the sweetness of the ice cream, I think.
Mm. Combat. You know, that's a really good lead-in to this movie.
Combat.
Why?
This movie that's all about war toys.
It's not all about war toys.
What is it about? Does someone want to say what it's about?
So we open with a Christmas pageant. On this Christmas pageant, you see a bunch of little children dancers. Some of them are dressed as elves. Some are scary gingerbread men. One's a scary snowman with a big, open, gaping maw of a mouth. And they're singing The Closing of the Year. And
which is a very pleasant song.
Yeah, Santa flies in on a biplane and starts dropping little gifts with parachutes on them. Meanwhile, we see that the CEO of Zevo Toys, Kenneth Zevo, played by Donald O'Connor, is meeting with his estranged brother, General Zevo, played by a noted British person, Michael Gambon. Basically, we find out that Kenneth Zevo is dying soon, and he wants his brother to be in charge of the factory. His brother is a little reluctant to do so because he's a military man, and he has no experience with this sort of thing. But he decides to stay on and take over the running of this factory instead of Kenneth giving the job to his son, Leslie, played by Robin Williams, because he doesn't believe that Leslie is mature enough, or his daughter, Alsatia, played by Joan Cusack. I don't know why he doesn't give it to Alsatia, except perhaps maybe because, as we find out later, she's a robot.
Plot twist.
Plot twist.
He starts running the factory. He sees that they're doing a lot of goofy stuff. All the workers like to sing this Tori Amos song and dance around. He's having none of this. He realizes that they can get into making more war toys, which they've never made before. He brings in his son, Patrick, played by LL Cool J, to head up an investigation of internal leaks in the company, and Robin Williams' character, Leslie, finds him harassing... what's Robin Wright's character's name?
I don't know.
Shit.
Do they ever even say it?
I feel like they must, right?
Once, maybe.
Hang on.
Georgia?
We just made Georgia.
No, it's just because she has a...
Montana?
Yeah.
Dakota. I think it was Dakota.
Virginia.
Alabama?
Virginia. Gwen. Her name was Gwen.
Oh,
Jesus.
Could have fooled
me. Gwen. He finds LL Cool J's character, Patrick, harassing Gwen... played by Robin Wright.
With the two of them pressing their faces into what is clearly a copier, but what they insist on calling a duplicator.
Right, it's a duplicator for his duplication investigation.
They are duping.
There's, I guess, what the movie would want us to call a meet-cute between Robin Williams and Robin Wright. Two Robins. And
it's kind of a meet-meh.
Yeah. They have no chemistry, but the movie really wants them to be together. So basically, she reacts to him sort of as, like, the way that, like, a woman might react to being approached to by a very energetic child, and then she sort of tries to, like, humor him, more or less. Like, if you saw this woman and this man having a conversation in real life, you would, like, want to go up to her very quietly and be like, are you okay? Like, do you need help with this situation?
Or you just assume that she's, like, his caregiver or something.
Yeah. While they're doing all this, Zevo discovers that he wants to go into more of a straight-up war program, where he realizes that in the future, because military budgets are being slashed everywhere, it would be cheaper for them to essentially create drone warfare. They could create planes that don't need pilots, and it would be much, much cheaper. Tiny tanks that would just sort of sneak in, not be on any radar, and this would be the wave of the future.
It's pretty prescient.
Yeah, it is. So he starts going in this direction the entire time. I don't know, I thought someone else would take over by now.
No, you're doing a terrific job.
You're doing a great job. I was just thinking, like, thank God you're doing this, because the plot was kind of hard to follow. I don't know, what really happens after that? It really just sort of vamps for a good long while of General Zevo taking over more and more of the factory. Literally, people are being boxed in by moving walls. Mm-hmm. When Robin Williams is about to start macking on Gwen in a very uncomfortable moment, because again, he is like a child in an adult's body and she is clearly a grown woman. General Zevo busts through the wall of the room they're hanging out in, and it seems that things have finally gone too far.
He and Alsatia put on a music video.
Yeah.
Because that happens after that.
Right.
So he and Alsatia, they manage to somehow swipe a key card, which we never see how that happens.
No, it's a complete mystery.
Yeah, he just has it. And he puts up a motion picture screen in front of one of the hidden cameras. And while...
Can I make a slight correction here?
Yes.
He puts up... because this is how you do it. This is how you pull a scam off. He puts up a perfect replica of the hallway.
Right. Yes. On the motion picture screen.
As if to simulate that the hallway is
still
not
there.
Moving.
Yeah, and no one is there.
And then, because once he's done that, that's only step one of the tricking procedure. Then it falls down and it becomes a music video.
Yes,
set. Exactly.
But then they also have to add a plaque a little below the screen.
Yes.
Because otherwise you'd think it was security footage.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes. But they need to be convinced that it was MTV.
So they just put
a nicely engraved MTV logo on this sticky plaque.
It's really crazy.
Yes.
Although I did have a question that the little like blurb and titles come up in the bottom corner of the screen. Mm. They couldn't have projected that onto the camera. So was the feed also hacked?
That was done in post.
Okay, great.
So they do this ridiculous music video as Yolanda and Steve. John Cusack continues to vamp while Robin Williams sneaks into the secure area. He sees a bunch of kids sitting basically in front of little projection screens with their hands on sort of like joysticks. And they realize that they're like shooting at like landmarks and people on streets and cars and all these sort of things. And he realizes...
But no Volvos.
Not Volvos.
Yes, no Volvos. Volvos. Guys are okay. Guys, buy a Volvo. So Robin Williams takes this to General Zevo after narrowly escaping something called the Sea Swine. We don't know how he escapes it or what
we're
the sea swine is.
Yeah, it just sort of looks like a large...
See, I think it's a hippo. When they show it at the end, I'm almost convinced it's a hippo.
It's kind of amorphous. It doesn't really have
Right, I was going to say, it almost looked more kind of just like a massive sea cucumber, like because it's just sort of like sliming around.
Yeah, and it has like antennae that come out.
Yeah.
But at one point it uses an antennae to like press its auxiliary power.
Right.
Anyway, it's not
an ugly, goofy creature.
We never get a clear read on.
Right. And so Robin Williams and the other higher-ups of the toy factory basically demand to General Zevo that they need to see what's going on inside there. And
he's like, give me 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Also, meanwhile, Zevo's son, Patrick, meets up with Patrick's grandfather's
nurse.
World War II pinup-styled nurse.
Uh-huh.
They're about to have sex, I guess, and it's also in a trailer somewhere
in
these rolling
they
hills.
They're engaged, because she says, like, when are we going to announce our engagement?
Right.
Yeah.
Which is, never goes anywhere. He finds out from her 2 things. One, that she boned his dad, and 2, that his father was responsible for the death of his mother when she was sent as Jane Fonda's lookalike into Vietnam.
Right. When in actuality, he had always said that it was appendicitis that
killed
their mother.
So Patrick's had it. He goes right over to
Leslie's house.
Defects to the other side.
Yeah. Right. So he goes right over to Leslie's house, pops up camouflaged during their dinner.
Yeah.
Which is a shtick, by the way.
Yeah, that's always a shtick.
And just spills the beans on his father's plans. His father ends up finding out.
Leslie, Gwen, Alsatia, Owens, and Patrick all decide that they have to sneak into the factory and stop General Zevo. They sneak in. Zevo has a bunch of his own evil toys waiting to try and stop them. There is a little bit of a battle between the older toys that Zevo used to create and the new war toys. The older toys all get slaughtered. Meanwhile, Leslie tries to sneak in to ambush General Zevo with Patrick. Leslie decides to crash the biplane from the beginning, Christmas pageant, in through Zevo's conference-style office window.
Zevo kind of freaks out at this, and...
As one would.
Mm-hmm. He screams, like, I'll kill you, I think?
Yeah.
And grabs onto Robin Williams, and they're sort of tussling on this biplane as it kind of goes back over the room.
So what happens is one of the drone toys is trying to hit Robin Williams,
right.
And it misses him, hits the control panel in Zevo's office, and then the Trade Federation ship blows up, and all the battle droids just break down and stop moving.
Well, meanwhile, again, this is leading to a malfunction. I guess this is what leads to the malfunction with the Sea Swine, because as everyone's sort of recovering on the ground and regrouping, the Sea Swine sort of, like, slithers up.
Shoots Alsatia first.
Her head goes flying
her head
off of her body.
Pops off her body.
There's literally a spring
yeah.
sticking out of
there
her neck.
There are sparks flying out of her neck as she bounces around. We realize that, again, yes, she is a robot. It is established that...
Robin Williams drops to his knees and immediately drops all this exposition to explain it. In a snap.
I was saying. Sorry. She realizes that she is a robot. His father made her for him after his mother died. So for whatever reason, his father, upon the death of his mother, decided to make a burden for Robin Williams. to take care of, where he has to literally, like, tuck her in at night and put her to sleep because she has the mentality of a child, more or less. We realize that she's going to be okay because she has the plans. Meanwhile, the sea swine shoots at the escaping General Zevo, and it sort of turns him into kind of a, I don't want to say a vegetable, but he's not quite altogether there anymore.
I guess because, he's an invalid?
Yeah, because it's just at the end.
But
it's just
like
him,
his father.
Right, yeah. It's him and his father, and they're just all, like, saluting at, like, a conveyor belt of soldiers that are being, like, paraded in front of their
toy soldiers.
Yeah.
Toy soldiers.
And so they're very happy. We have another Christmas pageant, and then, you know, everyone gets together, and it's all very happy at the end, and it is the closing of the year yet again.
Yeah, so I would have helped, but I was too busy sketching all the toys that I remember seeing in the movie.
That's very good.
Did you get Alien Al?
No, I got the bear that blows up.
Yeah.
And is the
peacock?
It, you know, yeah, the peacock.
Hey, that's
the
good.
Plane.
Oh, that is really nice, actually.
What about the little baby with
the
tank?
I started to draw the baby's head there, but like,
what about
that's
the,
a much more
what
a
about,
complex figure.
What about the weird porcelain girl doll whose head splits in half, and then a weird claymation thing comes out.
I really like, I thought it was supposed to be like the goddess, the Indian goddess.
I thought so too. I thought it was like Shiva
or
something.
Yeah.
I thought it was like Shiva.
Yeah, I thought it was Shiva.
Or
Shiva,
like,
and then the gun barrel comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Kali.
It's cut on, you know, it makes sense for like a tank, basically.
Yeah.
And that would be, by the way, absurd if this movie was like...
I like,
it's
I prefer
like,
the other one.
Well, it's like, we have all this other shit going on, so we're also going to invoke a sim.
No, I prefer the beach ball that, like, bounces down and then, like, it, like, unfurls and becomes, like, a spider-like contraption and, like, a toy grows out of it. And it's like...
But it's like a spider-like child
like a spider
strumming a...
Well, it's a hula.
It's
a, she's
yeah, it's a
hula dance.
Yeah.
So you
right.
Play.
But it,
yeah.
It kind of has, like, the points, the stripes of the ball become, like, spider-like tentacles for it to walk on.
I don't think that's physically possible.
No.
No.
It's creepy.
No, I mean, how does it bounce?
How does the metal bend back?
Okay, by the way, if we're really going to get into, like, the technological advances, aside from the honestly quite prescient idea of drone warfare, which this movie just sort of stumbles right in through, there's the metal that can bend, that is presumably also soft enough to be a ball that bounces.
Yes.
There's the sea swine, which appears to be a techno-organic... hippo, sea slug, something.
I think
it's an abomination.
I think it's just, it's nature.
It's a crime against God.
It's an elderly thing.
We have a toy factory with walls that apparently can readily move whenever you need it to.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of is if they'd, like, established that, that's not actually a bad idea, right? Like, a fun toy store, like a dollhouse style factory that, like, the whole walls are, like, just on coasters.
See, there's a weird part of me that likes it as, like, a metaphor, you know?
Oh, of course.
Like, the idea that, like,
they're being hemmed
in. The walls
in.
Are literally
the walls are
like,
in the puke room.
Yeah, in the horrible puke room with their terrible puke names.
Why do they feel like this is the room we need to test our puke in? And, like, a clinically white
puke room. I kind of liked that touch, actually. I thought that was fun.
It's like a clean room.
Well,
yeah.
It's really walkout-esque, isn't it? Because they have to put on those white, the TV suits when they're in the TV room.
And I think it was refreshing to just this was weird, but it was refreshing to just see a clean, strikingly composed image without this weird pastel muddlement and this other thing happening here and this. I mean, I love patterns and bright colors as much as the next person, but it gets a little much sometimes in this movie.
Let's start with this, like, tone issue of the movie. Like, it's got, I don't know how to describe the tone because, like...
Well, so the movie is called Toys. It's about a toy factory. It's a very visually, like, friendly movie to look at. Like, if you looked at this movie, like, it's a non-threatening movie, if that makes
sense. No, it's very bright.
Yeah,
I think the movie's, like, MO is to deliver these very enchanting pieces.
Very enchanting images.
But... contrary-wise, on the other hand, you have Michael Gambon saying that a design is baby shit. You have Alsatia saying at her father's grave that the whole factory is going to shit.
Yeah.
At some point, whenever Robin Williams is harassing Robin Wright for sex, he holds up a tiny devil puppet and says, "I want to get laid," and puts it back down, which is unsettling.
Really unsettling.
And then
later,
they're clearly about to have sex because she takes her top off and her bra gets caught on, like, a drone robot.
But, and then it's even weirder because you're getting the perspective of the drone robot not seeing but recording them having sex.
Right,
and there are two men listening in.
Yeah, and they're like really
it's
into it.
So,
really into
well,
it.
It's
yeah.
so creepy too because all you're hearing is like an occasional groan, and I'm like, I don't need this.
Especially not from Robin Williams.
No,
it's just
but
like...
I mean, it's not even just that. I mean, it's the fact that like you're watching Michael Gambon, like it's near Babadook levels of watching Michael Gambon become unhinged as an individual. Like, it goes to some dark places.
Yeah.
Like,
which.
That scene of him at night where he's like, I don't know what I gotta do, and he's like running back and forth across a whimsically bouncy bridge.
Yeah, like shooting off flares in the back.
Yeah, and just like talking about like, I gotta indoctrinate kids, or we're gonna put them in
beach nuts, beach crack, beach ball.
Whatever the That line was so great.
It's so, I mean, he really seemed like he was just going to, like, swing for it.
It's disturbing. I mean, he is, like, off his rocker.
We don't really have a good reason for that. That's what's the problem.
He just comes in day one and he's already a little.
There's, I think the tone suffers from the fact that it's sort of offering you a buffet and it's not really committing to anything enough to make any of it good.
Yeah.
So there's a melancholy aspect to it. There's a whimsical aspect to it. But it's kind of for kids, but it's dealing with adult issues. It's not that I don't think these tones couldn't have all been managed or properly juggled together, but I do think it stacked the deck against itself.
So this was PG-13, right? Am I right?
It was?
I think so.
I don't remember really when this came out because I was too young really to have like a firm grasp of like movies that were coming out at the time. But like, do you think this was a movie that parents thought kids should see?
It's interesting you would say that. So I only ever saw this movie because
I think they thought it was a family movie.
I think they thought it was a family movie. But the weirdest part of it all is back when Comedy Central just used to like play movies and then The Daily Show, this was on that all the time. And that's how I saw this movie a whole bunch when I was younger. I just remember feeling very weird watching it because it feels like, oh, this is like a very candy-coated, pleasant children's movie, but it's not really. There's a lot of other dark things going on.
Absolutely. It was never written to be like a kid's movie.
Mm.
I think it was meant to be a movie about adults making toys. Yeah. And I think a lot of that comes through in the toy scientist talk. Mm. Like, because I think a lot of the best humor comes from that. Like, and I feel like that's how they knew, like, we don't want to make a movie like for kiddies about toys. Like, we want to make a movie about, like, adults who make toys.
But I think that also, because the movie has those kind of more whimsical, childlike elements, it probably confused the hell out of whoever was marketing this film at Fox.
Exactly.
I mean, they probably didn't know what to do.
Did you say the tagline was?
Oh, laughter
is a state of mind, is that right?
Yeah.
Which has nothing to do with what we see in the movie.
It looks very,
it's
like
not
60s.
About, what's really frustrating me about that to me, too, is that tagline says to me that this movie is going to be about the kind of like the healing quality of humor and being able to laugh, which this movie is not about.
Right, which
and
Patch Adams delivered in
exactly. That's
yes,
say. That's a better tagline for Patch Adams.
Completely. I don't know. And then it seems to be implying like a trippier aspect that's not really there. And also, I think when I'm going into this, like, okay, you have at the very beginning of the movie, Robin Williams and Joan Cusack's dad dies. And so you think, okay, maybe the grieving process is going to be about humor. No, there is no grieving process, really. He's in the ground and then it's done.
So I think like a lot of the marketing and the at least in the poster design, I think it was like almost like 60s psychedelia inspired. Like the music video is very much like that. Mm-hmm. Like with the part where his like legs are really long in the chair and like there's like, it looks like
the arms just also like drool right down.
Yeah, I mean, it's very like modish.
Yeah, then like walking back and forth
and, like,
in an eyeball.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of those images
are
from Magritte. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is, the one thing that I do remember about Toys is the trailer, which I can't remember if I've shown you guys before.
Oh, yeah, it's
isn't
terrible.
It just Robin Williams riffing
yes.
It's Robin Williams standing in a field. They parody it on the Simpsons episode Burns' Air, where Mr. Burns just, like, stands in a field and tries to, like, at once looks for air. And I feel like the only reason you would remember the trailer for Toys in this day and age is because you know that episode of The Simpsons. But it's just Robin Williams, like, being like, oh, come see my movie Toys. It's going to be in theaters. And it, like, it's just, it's such a weird trailer because it tells you nothing about the movie. So I almost wonder if the marketing, like, in seeing this movie was like, I don't know what to do. Just have him stand in the field and make jokes.
Because actually, that makes me think then, if that was the case, A, they were probably like, we can't market the movie on its own because we don't know who it's for and what to do with it. And I'm sure they had a similar conversation that we're having now, which is, what the fuck is this tone? But then, so much of this movie is built around the idea of, hey, isn't Robin Williams so irrepressible and charming?
I think, another thing with the like marketing versus like who this movie was made for, and talking about, like, the fact that there is, like, this weird tone, but there's, like, whimsical imagery throughout and, like, weird, like, childish jokes. I think that, I mean, maybe this is, like, assumption, but maybe this is all how I would do it. But I think the point of that is, like, they didn't want adults to see this movie, but they wanted these, like, childish things to happen in it because part of the message or the intended message of the movie was, like, hey, don't forget that pies in the faces are funny, too.
Right, well, and, like, hold on to your inner child.
Yeah, like, hold on to your inner child. Like, yeah, like, a smoke suit, it's funny.
That's funny.
It's just not done well enough.
Well, no, I don't. Nothing that this movie, I think, wants to or try to deliver is delivered.
No.
The other thing that's sort of interesting for me, just like, not to keep going back to marketing, but the fact that this movie came out shortly after Aladdin. And so this came out like briefly after that. I think it was after Aladdin. Do you remember for sure, Brendan? It was either directly before or directly after. And I want to say
I think it was after as well.
Okay. So yeah, because one of the big deals with Aladdin, when Robin Williams did Aladdin, he had a stipulation with Disney that the genie could not be used in more than 25% of like the posters or like the advertising. And so what Disney Disney did to, like, fall within that rules, but not really, was they made everyone else very, very small. And so the Genie was still, like, 25%. But he was the only, like, large character. And everyone else was, like, tiny Aladdin, tiny Jasmine, like, tiny camels in the background. And because Robin Williams, like, had that condition was because toys was something he felt really, really passionate about. And he didn't want Aladdin to overshadow the success of, like, what he hoped toys would have. And so it's also interesting that, like, because Aladdin was such a success, people probably went into toys being like, oh, Robin Williams is going to make like a bunch of funny jokes again. Like, this is, we're going to get more of the Genie for 2 hours. And you don't get that.
No. Let's talk about characters in general. We can start with Leslie, but we got to talk about the thesis statement of characters is that none of them are developed very well at all except for one.
No.
Which we'll get to.
We will get to, and it's going to be a festival of love. But if we're starting on Leslie, Robin Williams' character, and we have all, I think, said versions of this, but they are clearly trying to cash in, I think, on being quick and witty and silly and whimsical and going all over the place. And look, I'm there for that. He's very funny and he's very on when he can do that. But it never, in this movie, not for a moment, does it ever feel organic. It doesn't feel like it's coming from him. It feels like they wrote every single word and they're like, don't you fucking dare go beyond. Because it's boring. He seems really obnoxious through most of the movie. That whole thing where he offers hors d'oeuvres, a deviled egg, rather, to General Zedro.
He's like, oh, better call the exorcist.
They cut to a shot, several shots of Zedro just looking at him, just glaring like, okay, are you done yet? Yeah, and I was like,
can I have the fucking egg?
I was like, I'm there right with you right now.
So, Kevin, by the way, but were they all fake? I assume they were all fake.
Oh, what a pain in the ass he must be. He doesn't even have any real legs.
But it was like the smoke suit, like that was a cool image, but I also just kept thinking like, if I'm in this place, I'm just like, just chill out.
No,
for
this
a
is like,
but like, all right, I think in a more well done version of this movie, somebody walking around in a smoke suit or like testing out toys like that, like walking in with the body wrap is like, oh, good job.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because there is, I feel like at this sort of utopian, like, everyone's great toy factory, people know the line of, like, when it's like, okay, we gotta actually do work now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I feel like pranks like that are something that would be welcomed.
Yes.
But they're not, I guess because you never see how, like, his current employees react to it. You only see how, like, the general and the sort of, like wary, like, second-in-command guy that, like, they're just like, oh, this is, we've had enough of this.
It's weird that the villain is kind of uses the audience sort of in that way.
Yeah, because, like, aside from Gwen, you really don't know how the other employees think of...
Or how his behavior is received by the world, really.
So I have this theory, too, that Leslie, I don't think Leslie, I mean, Alsatia we'll get to, but, like, I think that Leslie, we talked about it, it's just really poorly socialized. Like, has he ever been around other people?
There's even, and I thought it's interesting in concept too. One or two of his conversations with Gwen have such a sad edge to them for me. And I don't think that was intentional because there's moments where he's like pushing his riffing so hard that it comes across as desperate.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like folding into the character as I'm watching it being like, oh God, this person just wants to talk to anyone. Just like she happens to be in front of him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's just like taking that with both hands.
It is interesting that he never really seems to interact with other people in the workplace. Aside from like Owens and Alsatia, you don't really see a lot of scenes of him like, you know, like talk, like, oh, hey, Judy. Like,
yeah, right.
He has his gang of toy scientists.
And they all, for their part, they all seem to be like of like minds.
They do. Yeah.
And I like those characters. That's a cool little bunch.
I like the four of them too.
Yeah.
I think the biggest problem I have with like the gags, like the smoke jacket and that weird noise.
Body of sound.
Yeah.
Body of sound.
Yeah. Is that it just, they so all go on so long. Like, it would be one thing if he walked into the room with the smoking jacket and was like, oh, it's our novelty smoking jacket. And Alsatia goes, smoke, that's funny. And then he turns it off and he's like, can't find the switch. Foghorn, ooh. Like, oh, here's the Titanic. Like,
right.
Okay, stop it now.
So interestingly, I think in the first case, he genuinely couldn't find the switch. In the case of the body of sound, he leaves and he's like, I've been a bad boy.
That's right.
He turns it off as if like he was deliberately trying to do that, which is like, I don't have you didn't show me that this character was a hidden genius.
Yeah.
Like there's a clear archetype at work, I think, with this character where he's like a dilettante who like has potential and is intelligent, but he like doesn't like to have responsibility or he's afraid of having responsibility,
right.
So he acts like a fool.
They step at that as a potential arc for him in
but
like one scene.
Yeah.
Where he's having a conversation with Alsatia, tucking her in to that amazing duck bed.
Swan.
Swan, fine. Swan
bed. I thought it was a duck, I'm not sure.
It looked like a duck.
Well, I think there is a duck, but I think there's also a swan.
The point is, I'm obsessed with that bed. I want it. If Barry Levinson is ever listening to this and still has his hands on that prop, please.
Yeah, go put all
yeah.
it.
But, I love the fact that the duck bed, the top of the duck comes down, but then the wing comes
yeah,
down.
Like, yeah, folds over.
And then he turns the light off and the duck's eye comes on and goes quack.
Yep.
And it's so elegant, but also fun. I don't
yeah.
know. I just thought it was cool.
There's
Anywho.
So much of the production design in this film that it still just impresses the heck
yeah,
out of me.
But so he has a conversation with her and she says at one point, I don't understand why Dad didn't leave the company to Owens or to you.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, he could never leave it to me. He knows I'm not ready. Ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
But the movie doesn't really revisit that point. I don't think he's any more ready by the end of it.
No, and it presumably ends with him in charge of the factory, I guess.
Yeah,
who else
never
shown.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I think like the idea is
yeah.
Again, I think the idea that they never say, but what they should have done is like the second in command, Owens, he would have been a good choice to like guide Leslie, except for the fact that like in the beginning that's not a good option because Leslie would have been too complacent. And,
right.
like, at the end of the movie, Leslie is ready to take on responsibility, so Owens could easily be there to help him.
I guess. It's just, like, I like
Again.
That as an arc, and I want it.
It's not there.
But it was not there.
We're talking hypotheticals.
And
what
instead,
I think was trying to happen.
To go back to that body of sound scene that kind of tripped off this whole Hidden Genius idea, I felt annoyed. So it's not
yeah.
as if I'm like, oh, this guy is, like, really rattling their cage, and
You're
that's and I like
no.
it. I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point, too, with, like, the smoking jacket thing. Like, it's just, like, it's not funny to me.
No.
It's not like I would be okay with this if I was like, oh my gosh, like, he's such a stinker. Like, he's
yeah.
doing all these funny jokes, but I'm just like, no, fucking take that jacket off.
I think all of these problems come back to one issue that this film has generally, is that it's really indulgent.
Yes.
Just about every level.
Shots and sequences go
yeah.
on for...
Oops.
Way too long, just like that
shtick.
Horn.
Yeah. Someone used some Rob Williams level improvising.
Oh, that was the shtick horn.
The driver is very upset.
But I know what you mean. They hold on to things too
mm-hmm.
long in this movie.
Way too long.
So, like, the idea of the fact that, like, Robin Williams, for whatever reason, is just, like, off in this movie, like, you're not gonna get magic, it kind of reminds me of, like, a time when Robin Williams was deliberately doing his shtick, but did it much better, which
mm-hmm.
is, like, I don't know if anyone's ever seen this, but, like, there was a Tim and Eric bit. Where, like, Tim or Eric says, like, I got you a Robin Williams for your birthday. And, like, actual Robin Williams comes in and they make this whole bit of, like, how, like, Robin Williams, like, he's just, like, this manic, like, dog it person, like, why are like, doing, like, like, Robin Williams. Just doing his Robin Williams stick, but it's, like, hilarious. Like, it's, again, it's, like, you're saying, like, this is what Robin Williams is, this, like, manic, never stop talking, like, just, like, nonstop bit machine.
Which they clearly tried to channel in this movie, but it comes across as tired.
Yeah, and
there's no life or soul
yeah.
in it.
I don't
really.
Know what the cause. I don't know if it was, like, that it was too scripted or that Robin Williams didn't have full control. I feel like if Robin Williams had full control and was, like, in the right state of mind, he would have made this character. He would have sold this character.
I wonder if just... Because, again, this is, like, a passion project of Barry Levinson's.
Yeah.
He's been working on it for, like, forever before he filmed it. So I wonder how much of it was, like, when he had gotten to the point that he had written the script, he was like, you can improvise a little bit, but this is what I want it to be, so please. He's like, don't go nuts here. Like, just do
like,
this.
Yeah,
and maybe
he almost feels like he's got a sort of like muted button
yeah.
on Robin Williams.
He just probably just got too attached to it,
yeah.
and he could not stand to see it changed.
Yeah,
Gwen, she has two purposes. Within universe, they imply that she was hired by Robin Williams' dad so that Robin Williams could fuck her.
Yeah, and
so,
become a man.
Gwen is an interesting thing in this movie where I feel like Gwen is the reason why some of my friends come up to me and they say, like, I hate when Hollywood has to put a romance in every single movie.
Mm.
Because, like, I like romance in movies and I'm like, I'm happy for a side romance to be in any movie, but, like, people have this problem because of characters like Gwen, who,
yeah.
like, show up and have very little purpose
no,
to be there.
No, she has no agency of her own.
Just shoehorned in and, like, have, like, a... Like, it's such a terrible romantic arc. Like,
and it's
this.
A terrible female character.
It's
like,
a non-existent
she,
romantic
She
arc.
Exists there
yeah.
solely so that Robin Williams will find someone to fuck.
I feel
well,
like she
but
should
then,
almost be the main character. She could come into this crazy twitch.
She's your eyes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, she doesn't know. She
Except
should.
She seems to be quite a kook herself. No one is... I don't think anyone's asking her to
what?
Show up dressed
know.
Like a cross between a Highlander and a ringleader.
She seems pretty, like... grounded at certain points where she's like, you guys are really weird.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, she has moments of, like, clarity.
But
yeah.
that's her second purpose, right? That's more of, like, the meta purpose of her character is to react to both Leslie and Alsatia as, like, oh, there's something wrong with you, but you're so funny.
Yeah.
It's almost as though, like, maybe they were thinking, like, if Robin Wright laughs more, the audience will in turn laugh more.
Mm.
It also feels
yeah.
like Robin Wright is the more likely person to have been a robot created for someone else.
Exactly, right.
Affirmation.
Well,
because, like, all she does is be like, yes, that's a good joke.
Well,
yes,
that's true, but she doesn't eat vitamin pill sandwiches. So,
General Zevo is, I mean, I don't know what his fucking problem is.
I don't either.
But he needs some therapy.
I actually struggle to really get a hold on what that character is, aside from really Michael Gambon's scenery chewing jumping off.
Yeah, there's a lot of scenery chewing.
Yeah.
And it's enjoyable, don't get
it
me wrong.
I like it.
I do find myself watching and being like, I'm enjoying this, but there's no context to this that I can find.
I think
they don't even tell
us
the whole family story here. You get to see the great-grandfather, and you kind of, it's inferred that, you know, his side of the family was military, and Kenneth, who started the toy factory, didn't want to do that. But it's all really glossed over.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that there's definitely... You at least can discern that there is a father issues thing where his father, he's never good enough for his father.
Yeah, right. His father's a 4-star general and he's a 3-star general.
Yeah.
Because of that damn British accent.
And you also get the sense that, like, I'm starting to assume a lot, but like, you feel like maybe he was like an okay general, but also like has a history of going a little bit too far.
That's what I'm like, right? Is he like a crazy MacArthur type?
Well, because he's like, the UN, they always get in the way. Then
he starts blowing up the UN fans in the video game, which is actually, I really love that scene.
That's a great
scene.
But it's too dark for this movie.
Oh, it's so dark.
Maui Chowie over here pointed out to me that sequence of him and Patrick in the arcade feels like it's in a different movie a little bit.
You lose the gently surreal touch there completely.
It gets garish, gets dark when it's not neon.
Yeah.
It's completely, I mean, it introduces the idea of children desensitized to violence through video games a lot more elegantly than that shot of the kids just like shooting things.
Yeah. See, I kind of it reminded me almost of like something out of like Tron or something.
Yeah,
like all these like the panels of lights on the ceiling and these rows and rows of arcade games and these children just like standing there. I didn't hate it. It wasn't great. It could have been a lot better, but I didn't hate it.
It feels a very strange thing for the movie to be to have in the movie because it's in the 90s, but people apparently still love all these like old wind up Victorian dolls.
Right.
But like also
with
they make
porcelain
video
cases.
Games. Right. Like even Zevo Toys makes like prescient Oculus Rift virtual reality games, like, but they still make wind up.
Right, that was the second prescient prediction, right? Of the Oculus Rift.
Yeah,
right.
Drone Warfare and Oculus Rift. Toys new.
So yeah, Zevo is fun to watch, but I really
There's nothing about his psyche.
Yeah, he goes from like normal person to like unhinged, barely human villain. Like, and then in the end, like, has his mind just been fried?
I assume his brain just like snapped or something.
Yeah, he just seems he's in a hospital bed, and you just get the impression that like
this is like
his
all
life.
He wants to do. He just wants to like wave at people, like toy soldiers all day long, and he's very happy to do it.
Yeah,
that by the way, I mean, there's kind of upbeat music playing over that shot. It's really sad because it's these two men who are both, I guess at this point, retired generals in their full dress whites.
Yeah.
Laid up in bed in a tent that's supposed to look like a World War II era med tent with Debbie Mazur dressed up like a Betty Page nurse pinup. Mm-hmm. And they're just watching a nonstop conveyor belt of toy soldiers parade in front of them. That's sad.
I'd like to posit that, like, maybe that's like a Brazil-like ending for that character where he wanted to become his father and he actually did become his father.
Oh.
Maybe that's a weird happy ending for
him
in some
way. That's true.
Like, it's an ironic twist of fate for that character.
I mean, that's like, it's just like a perfect visual metaphor for like people that refuse to accept change.
Yeah.
I do think it's...
They just don't want to be in reality, so they put themselves in this tent where they can just imagine that it's still like World War II.
Yeah.
I do love that Michael Gambon called his father Daddy. Way too much.
In that missing, terrifying voice.
Daddy.
Yeah, no, but it was just so... It was kind of...
What am I going to
do? That's exactly what it was, though. It felt like the classic, like, mincing 80s cartoon villain.
Well, you feel like a petulant child, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Daddy!
I think the reason why the character works is entirely Michael Gambon. Like, anything that works with the character is because of him. Anything that doesn't is because it's a terribly written character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patrick?
I was going to include him with Alsatia, because frankly, I'm on board with
him. All right, well, do you want to segue into Patrick and then segue to Alsatia?
Let's
talk about some of the...
Let's talk about Patrick.
Let's talk about Patrick. So, like,
ladies love Cool James.
Yes.
Ladies love Cool James. He's, as a character, I'd say he's sort of not much up.
Yeah, he's not that
kind
complex.
Of a typical
rock star. He doesn't have to be as complex as other characters.
No.
But he does... He is a character that is intended to have a turn.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've already discussed, the turn, as it's written, is a little weird.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be as complicated as that. First of all, the reason he gets in the story, Brendan pointed out, is very, like, bizarre. Like, you didn't have to set up this thing where there was espionage. You could have just either come...
Because it never comes up again.
Yeah. He could have come with his father, or his father could have been like, nobody here can make... You said it.
Yeah, no one here can make war toys. This is my son, Patrick, who's in the military. He'll show you what war toys
are.
That
would just be so much more elegant storytelling, and it would also be similarly elegant to then also cut Debbie Mazur out of the movie.
Yeah, well, you can easily cut him out without Debbie Mazur, because all he has to do is... He just needs a reason to, like... turn against his father. And
right.
I think his father goes insane enough that there's any number of moments you could pick where it's like, whoa, let's not kill...
Right, there's the scene where Robin Williams is trapped with the sea swine.
Yeah.
And he keeps saying, like, stop, don't move, Patrick, don't move, Leslie, don't move. And Michael Gambon's like, no, let him shoot, I want to see if it works, and, like, leaves. And, like, that would be a good point for him to be like, okay, my dad has gone round the bend.
Right.
Like, let's rethink this.
That's what I'm saying, like, you don't need Debbie Mazur telling him, by the way, not only did I fuck your dad, he was indirectly responsible for your mother's death.
I mean, fairly directly. He sent her dressed again as Jane Fonda
into a war zone.
Yeah.
The other thing is, as long as we're talking about, like, his weird espionage thing, what I don't want to lose is the fact that he is, like, some sort of crazy camouflage expert, because it provides a lot of the successful moments of levity in the movie.
Yeah, I think almost every like Patrick reveal is like a great scene.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yes. He comes out
of the cushions.
Yeah.
He's got like a pillow on his back because he was like part of.
I just love that. I think there's only one shot where you see the pillows full on, but I just love that you can kind of see, like, the ruffled edges of them peeking out from, like, a shoulder. It's so funny.
Right. To fully explain it, there are various scenes wherever Patrick is ostensibly in the scene, but no one realizes it, where he is either disguised as cushions on a couch or part of a wall, or later on we see that there are 2 feet in a bathroom and you assume that it's him, but in actuality he's hiding in a different stall and has put the feet there as a diversion.
Yeah.
Like, it's all some very good business.
I love how he exits the film as well, where he just runs off.
Yeah.
Can't see him anymore. They yell for him and he's like, just checking.
Also, I think LL Cool James sells the character very
well. Yeah, he has this really good speech that is not particularly well written, but
no,
like, delivered like a pro.
I'm a military man. I like a
military plate.
Yeah.
I like a fortress built around my mashed potatoes.
So the meatloaf doesn't invade my mashed potatoes.
But if we're going to talk about the military plate speech, Lee, would you like to tell us who he's giving that speech to?
Let's talk about
how she's dressed.
Character in this movie, my hero and future self,
Joan Cusack. The emotional heart of this movie,
yes.
As Lee has said several times.
The ticking robotic heart of this film.
Yes. I don't know what happened. I don't know if the character was just written particularly well, or if Joan Cusack is just, like, knocking it out of the park in every single movie, but she just nails this character. Like,
it could be... I do think some of the writing was smarter with that character, but I think it would have...
I mean, she's written like a child.
I think it would have failed with other people.
Yeah.
Because she just sells her lines in this with the perfect timing, the perfect facial expression, warmth. I mean, she plays a robot, and she is the most human... warm presence in this movie.
Yeah, and also, I do want to point out again, I think I've talked about this a couple times separately, but, like, if you were to take out the part, if you could just edit out the fact that she's a robot, and you, like, had one line added about her being, like, autistic or something, it's the same character. Like,
yeah.
She very, like, she, it makes sense that she has these characters because she's a robot, but it also, like, she is a very human person who also seems to have no sense of, like, personal space or, like, context of situation. She kind of says what she wants to say off the cuff. Like, when Robin Wright Penn is singing in the bathroom, she's like, oh, you shouldn't do that ever again.
Well, what does she also say? She's like, maybe it should be a duet. Maybe that will make your
singing.
Your voice be more acceptable.
It's so good.
She's great. Everything she says is, she's never off in a scene. Like, her physicality is just, like, always working.
Yeah, her reaction to the woozy helmet is awesome. Her wearing the paper dolls and, like, insisting that she tries on all the new paper doll outfits is just...
Yeah.
Adorable and charming. And
when she goes up to the lunch guy and she's like, what kind of sandwiches do you have today? The guy's like, oh, we have a chicken salad and a tuna salad. And she's like, gets upset that there's no, like,
I'm very disappointed you've never had
an applesauce sandwich. And they're like, we'll make one for you tomorrow. And she's like, okay, well, I guess I'll just have another mayonnaise sandwich.
And she rolls her eyes in the most adorable way.
Yeah.
And the thing about that is, between that and when she tells Robin Wright Penn that she sucks at singing, at no point does malice ever come through.
Mm-hmm.
No.
It never feels unkind.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels sweetly misguided.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, like a child.
Yes.
Or someone that just doesn't have that in their brain.
I don't know what it was, but she's able to find that kind of beautiful childish whimsy that I'm really here for that Robin could not find in his character.
I think that you brought this up, Chris, that she embodies, like, kind of the ethos and spirit that this movie should have across the board that it kind of misses. She is a perfect fit, and she should have been the model for the rest of the elements in the film.
Yeah.
And one of the sweetest things about the movie and about the character of Patrick is that, like, he is very nice with her. Like,
he has a connection with
her. Yeah, it's shown that, like, he visited once or twice, like, as a kid. And, like, he for anyone else to meet someone like this character in the movie, you'd be like, well, like, you wouldn't know how to react. But he's, like, incredibly natural, as if they're, like, old friends, and he's like, oh, yeah, you always look really nice. And, like, when he joins her at lunch, he, like, goes up and, like, pushes her chair in.
Oh, like a gentleman. It was really, really beautiful.
Yeah. And she, well, the whole time, like, they just have a really nice rapport. And, again, could have easily been an excuse to get to humanize Patrick and get him to realize quickly, like, oh, I'm on the wrong side of things.
I will posit that everyone was better in their scenes with Joan Cusack. Mm-hmm. Everyone felt more... I feel like she brought out...
was, for sure.
Yeah. I feel like she brought out more natural, warm performances from people when they were in a scene with her.
Yeah, the scene with Leslie tucking her into bed is very nice.
Very nice. The scene with Gwen in the bathroom felt so much more natural than all the time she was forced to be riffed at by Robin Williams.
I like the scene of Leslie in Alsatia at the memorial when she's like, my office was closed down. Like,
and Judy left. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what did she do,
Judy?
Yeah.
She painted the lips on the alligators.
Yes. Yeah. Everyone else is just such a lunatic. Such a fucking goddamn lunatic.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, you could, like, watch this entire movie waiting for, like, the Dr. Caligari twist ending.
Yeah.
Where they're all, like, victims in an insane asylum, and, like, General Zevo is the head of the insane asylum, and they're like, oh, he's the evil general coming to get us all. He's like, I'm just the doctor trying to make you all better.
As I was saying to special guest Brendan, this is the second movie he's guested on, and it's another movie in which a female actress knocks it out of the park with a portrayal of a robot woman.
Yeah. Again, I would say, at least, a weird quasi-romantic relationship.
Yeah.
Because, like, despite the fact that, like, if she were human, they would be cousins, her relationship with Patrick is semi, like, there seems to be some level of, like...
Well, because at the end, he's sort of... like, on her arm.
Yeah, and also, when he, like, disappears, she's like, he's so romantic and dashing.
Yeah.
I love in the end, you know, after she gets her head blown off, and they make sure to tell you very soon after that, oh, we have the designs, we can fix her, not a problem.
Yeah.
But she still needs a tune-up, and she gets out of the car after, like, stumbling and seems to, like, put her hair back on right, goes, so this is what Paris is like.
Yeah.
It's...
so great. Also, when, like, Patrick, I think Patrick does something, like, he gives her a flower or, like, kisses her on the cheek or something, and then her head just goes, like, just, like, tucks her head into her chin, and it's, like, really adorable.
Just, this isn't a specific character, but this was just the general presence of the workers at the factory, particularly in that happy worker,
worker. We need to talk about the happy workers.
Yeah, talk about happy workers.
Yeah, so, like, despite the fact that you're supposed to absolutely think that this is, like, utopian and amazing, everyone loves their job.
I wouldn't even take out the word utopia, because what they try to sell you so hard is how it's all sweet and whimsical and very, very sweet and kind.
Yeah, and everyone here loves their job.
And everyone here loves their job.
Everyone here is a happy worker.
Yeah.
What's so antithetical to me about that is this sequence pretty early in the movie where it shows the factory floor.
That's how you meet the factory.
Yeah. Everyone is in weird pastel smocks. I wish it was rainbow, but
it's blue. It's a pastel blue shirt. The sleeves are red, and the collars are like rainbow stripes.
Right. There is regular Brendan pointed out that the music almost starts to take on like a Soviet march feeling.
Again, it reminds me of like the 1984 song.
Yes.
Yeah. That they wrote for the movie.
Well, because it's just like, after a while, it's just like, pull the lever, stop the, because then you're like, in the it's like, pull the lever, push the button.
But they're happy about it, and you're also watching these like giant toy heads spit out toy parts onto a revolving luggage thing, which it actually kind of was like it's like a Zardoz moment.
I give you the gift of the toy arm.
Yeah, exactly. But it's also just weird as a visual, even taking out the terrible choice in music and the entire visual style of that sequence, seeing a giant toy head with lidded eyes have its mouth pop open, and then baby doll parts just get vomited out.
A big tongue there that is...
Yeah, it's a very, like, Attack on Titan
thing. Yeah.
Someone's regurgitating body parts.
It's so creepy and weird, and I just... That was when I was just like, okay, seriously, no one thought this wasn't working?
Maybe someday at work, I'm going to start listening to that song when I get it on a loop and see how long I can make it through the day hearing that song.
Are you
going to
come home and you're just going to be like,
I'll feel a lot better.
Yeah. Maybe that's the...
This is the secret.
Yeah, maybe that's, like, the formula.
I feel like they could have changed that scene they would have improved it if they didn't have the one woman mouth along with the song.
Yes.
Well, there's also a janitor.
The music being diegetic to it made it so much creepier.
It's way weirder.
If it was just people, like, reacting to music that were not necessarily...
What if there was no music, like, over the... Like, no words. It was just, like, a goofy song.
If it was just the music,
it would have been a little bit
It might be okay, yeah.
I think the words have this element sense of like authoritarian.
They really do, yeah.
It has a Big Brother element to
it's
it.
It's a weird mechanical chant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is why I think if you're trying to sell it, if you're trying to sell it as this greenest pasture, beautiful place to be,
mm-hmm.
that decision is completely counter to your purposes.
It is
because then you're
pasture.
Saying, no, this, it's already like this terrible military dictatorial style that comes in pretty quickly
mm-hmm.
with Michael Gambon. So I'm like, really nothing much changes except they just start making weaponized toys. The mechanism and the mood was already there for that. I do love, though, that when they first bring in Patrick for the leak and suddenly all this, there's like security personnel wearing those terrible, terrible uniforms. The Happy Worker song is playing, but it's remixed.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah,
how you know it's
like,
evil, because
yeah.
it's like more...
yeah, there's more beats, more sick beats on it.
Sick beats.
Sick beats.
Michael Gambon was the one who remixed it. Patrick, drop in more sick beats.
These beats need to be more fresh, Patrick.
Fresher beats!
What is that purpose of the scene where he shoots himself in the foot?
Oh, okay, so... I will tell you what IMDb posits, and I don't know if I agree with this or if this is just something that some person connected like 2 and 2 and got 8. But they say that it's a reference to a Confucius saying about like don't shoot yourself in the foot with a cannon to get rid of a fly. Like the idea, just like proportional response to everything.
Okay.
My understanding is just that he is like an unhinged lunatic, and instead of like just looking for a fly swatter, he's such a crazy army person that he's like, oh, shoot the fly.
I think it's both ultimately because this movie loves a very literalized. Visual metaphor.
Yeah.
So I think literally in this case we are supposed to both see him. He is a lunatic. That's not up for debate. But he is literally shooting himself in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think we've talked about everything that we should talk about in broad context. Before we get to fixes, are there any other final reflections people want to have?
Anything good that you want to mention that we haven't brought up?
Yeah.
The closing of the year song.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This movie, if nothing else, gives you the best Christmas song
boop, boop,
I've
boop,
almost
boop,
ever heard.
Boop, boop, boop.
It's got some, generally, I'd say it has some pretty good music.
It's got some good soundtrack, yeah.
But that song, like, really, like, the beginning and end of this movie are, like, why, I would say 50% of why I love this movie so much, I'll always watch it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just in terms of, like, looking to score this episode, like, find the closing of the year song.
Yeah, as someone who's, like, not a necessarily, like, a religious person who loves Christmas, I think it's, like, a really amazing, like... It really captures, like, the feeling of Christmas.
It's a nice, like, secular Christmas.
Yeah, and, like, the philosophy of it. Like,
yeah.
I love the chorus. I actually love the lyrics. I think they're, like, really great Christmas song lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
They have a really great message.
A lot of the visual vocabulary of this movie is extremely attractive.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There were points where I was like, oh, I wish we could have, like, this movie could have been made now.
The dollhouse that they live in?
Oh, yeah. Whenever they first pull up the dollhouse, it's just, like, this big block, and all of a sudden, the front part, like... falls flat and the, like there's a pop out that the house flat.
I thought I wanted more
out.
Of that. That's the kind of whimsy I'm on board with. Or I did like the in the beginning you kind of see that giant elephant blowing snow
mm-hmm.
over the factory. I loved that inside that dollhouse we see the shot starts in on a perfect dollhouse replica of the room the dollhouse is sitting in and then zooms out.
Pulls out. Yeah.
And that was really cool.
The shades of the room come down and it's like it's day out. It's like sun. But they pull the shades on, and the shades have, like, stars, and,
right.
like, the light changes when you pull the shades, and it's, like, suddenly night.
Yeah, in Joan Cusack's room, which is a room inside of a larger room.
Yeah, a lot of... She, like, seems to... This whole dollhouse thing with her, because she that's where she makes her dolls in, too.
Right,
is, like, a little room with her.
She's a little room inside a bigger room,
Yeah.
Well, because I think they do try to say, like... I mean, I guess, in a way, she is a living doll.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, like, foreshadowing?
Yeah, yes.
You think it's, like,
I mean, then it's also... I think they also try to, like... they tease it slightly when Patrick is, like... Oh, you know, it's been however many years, but I have never seen you get a day older.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's, I think, as was mentioned, sometimes the visual style gets a little too indulgent. I don't need that rolling hills path, that road inside the factory that they used so much, and I wasn't having it. But
that's a one-time gag. You can't use that, like, eight times.
No,
it gets
which
really
they do.
Old. Yeah.
And, or, like, towards the end when Robin Williams and everyone, like, winds up those old toys to kind of, like, march against the war toys. I thought there was a lot of effective imagery in that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was especially effectively sad watching these very porcelain old tin toys just getting blasted to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Except for the two bears crying over each other.
Yeah, that was just awful.
That was goofy.
And depressing.
Yeah.
It was like
the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi. They were like tin wind-up bears.
Yeah. There was also... I mean, I kind of like the aesthetic of the dolls. Like, even though it's old-fashioned, I like
mm-hmm.
it. Into, like, the plate spinning one. It was like a plate spinning doll.
Yeah.
It was also well-chosen and this is maybe minor, but it was also well chosen when the doll was, when a doll was clearly creepy, when it had kind of been weaponized, and then the dolls they chose for the ones you're still supposed to like, I never looked at that and was like, whoa.
Yeah.
They all seemed still charming.
Yeah.
One thing that sort of bugs me about this, and I don't really go into this at any point later on, so like, I don't know how you would even solve it. But it's the sort of thing that always bugs me whenever you have movies that are, like, set in the North Pole or something, where you go up to there and it's like, oh, here's Santa making toys, and he's, like, hammering a rocking horse, and here's a baby with, like, eyes that close. Like, kids don't fucking want that. Like, are, like, how is your toy company, like, staying in business if you're making wind-up toys?
It's the 90s, and they're making Victorian wind-up dolls,
right.
But also video games.
Right.
Like, what's happening?
And that's, like, and then he's also making, like, fake vomit, but he's also making, like, you know, like, little, like, baby dolls. It's
yeah.
just, like...
And big ears,
right.
And, like, an invisible
yeah, like,
leash.
So you're doing, like, novelty shit. And you're
yeah.
also doing dolls, and you're doing like old time tin toys.
I'll
like,
tell
yeah,
you,
got
I'll,
pranks
I'll,
and
yeah.
dolls.
I'll tell you how you fix that. Because by the way, I think where that gets lost is it equates this whimsy as only being able to exist in the past, which I think is sad and untrue. I think how you do that is you just go completely bonkers with all the kinds of like technological marvels that could be pulled off with some kind of like cutting edge toy thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what the movie sort of did by having it sort of isolated is like divorce it from reality and not bind it to a time.
But they do.
They
there's
really
Michael
do.
Jackson references.
Yeah.
There's
I think they needed to unbind it from time because like then you could have just had like if you wanted to do like a sort of like montage of like famous toys throughout history. Then you could have set it in this world where, like, there's some sort of form of electronic entertainment, but, like, people still play with toys.
Yeah. I think they needed that kind of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes.
Right.
Here's one thing I did need, though, as a general context. I feel like we never left that world. And I never saw what the rest of the world was.
No, you don't. It's very confusing.
What they reacted to.
See, I liked that, honestly.
I mean,
yeah.
I think it's not right.
It's very theatrical.
Yeah, there's something weirdly appealing to, like, it kept reminding me almost of the movie Shock Treatment, which is, like,
yeah.
the quasi-sequel to Rocky Horror,
yeah.
where it's entirely in a TV studio.
Yeah.
And so, like, I kind of, like, I get why you might want to see outside the world, but I would kind of love if the entire movie was just set, like, inside this complex.
I think there was a better way to do it than how they did this, because it's like, okay, is everyone living in this complex? It just seemed
yeah.
like, I also had no sense of space of where everything was in these rolling hills, and that part really threw me.
Let's talk about how we would fix this movie. Does anyone in particular want to start? Otherwise, I'm happy to stick the ball rolling.
Well, you start.
Sure. So I may have, like, hedged my bets there a little
yeah,
bit.
Go ahead.
All right. But I think, like, I have a couple things that I definitely know I want to do. The first of them is I definitely don't want Alsatia to be a robot. I don't understand why the whole time. It feels like it's there for one gag at the end where her head blows off. And she's
yeah, no, there's no other reason.
I think if you wanted to have her written as a sort of, like, autistic character, I think she's a really great representation of that, as is in the movie. Like, I think she's a character that you can love and admire and, like, it could be fairly authentic and a good representation, which I think they kind of lack in movies. There's not
yeah.
a lot of good representation of that. And she's such a good character to have an important role in the story because, again, she is this, like, emotional heart, and she's the one that, like, connects Patrick to the rest of the characters. Absolutely, like, Leslie needs to be that sort of, like, dilettante figure that I was referring to earlier, where he acts like this fool, but he is very intelligent on the inside. Like, he has been learning from his father his whole life. But it's more like a fear or an avoidance that he just doesn't want to take up that mantle yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the course of the movie, the uncle's encroaching, like, you know, takeover of the company is what pushes him to take charge. I also think with regards to the general, I don't like any of that. I don't like any of him going absolutely bonkers insane. I think you have a solid idea where these two estranged brothers and one of them join the military. And it seems like in this reality, the CEO is more of the black sheep because the father's general, so this maybe
right.
like,
yeah.
the CEO is the one that was like, I don't want to do this, I'm moving on to a different life. That may be, like, you could have this arc for General Zevo where as a kid, they were really close as brothers, and, like, General Zevo had a softer side to him, and the father just sort of, like, not, like, metaphorically beat it out of him and turned him into this, like, army man general guy.
Yeah.
But maybe the CEO is like, well, I know that there's, like, I miss a brother. He's separated from the rest of my family, and I don't like that. And I also, I know that my son can't take over the factory. And it gives more of a reason for him to sort of say, like, brother, I want you to take over the factory. Because I think you'll realize something about yourself that you've forgotten. Like, you'll find that part of yourself that you lost, so to speak.
I agree with that. It needs to be much better explained.
Yeah, and
I
think that instead of it ending with him in, like, some sort of weird comatose state, like, looking at soldiers for the rest of his life.
Going back to Tomorrowland, I feel the same way about General Zevo as I do about Governor Nix.
Yeah.
I feel like there should have been a redemption in that arc rather than, like, you're just completely obliterated and now you're nothing.
Right.
Exactly. So I think that the arc there is that he by the end of it, he and Leslie sort of come to terms and they sort of reform as a entire family unit.
Chris, what we'll go around the room.
All right, so I really did think about this. What...
You know, guys, you won't believe this.
I never do.
Time.
No, because there was... You know, when I watched this movie, I had a hard day. So kind of like during the toys getting blown up scene, I just started crying. So I think I was just open, emotionally raw to this, and I can still bring something from that, although I think I was watching it with a little more of a critical eye when we were watching it together tonight. So my thought is this. I think there's a lot of imagery in this that could remain whimsical, but also capitalize on what I think is a sort of sad, melancholy feeling to it. And mm-hmm. I feel the way to get to that place is to massively change the story. I think the plot here is not so much the struggle between this toy-based childish whimsy versus this, like, hard-nosed but still equally bonkers military thing. I think what I would like to explore more is this family. There needs to be more Kenneth in the lead-up to his death. There needs to be a lot more about figuring out how to grieve and go on. I think what you could potentially do, if you wanted to reorder things but also give yourself a decent audience surrogate, you make Gwen the audience surrogate, really kind of probably the main character, completely. So you expand that character a lot more. She comes in, kind of gets in with this family and sees what's going on. Kenneth dies, and then she's there to help slash watch slash kind of struggle with Alsatia and Leslie figuring that out. If you wanted to bring in the military aspect to kind of show where this all came from, you could do that. I just think it needs to be smaller and not be so center stage. Mm-hmm. You could kind of use that as like, oh, this was the counterpoint that maybe drove Dad to be the man that he was. But I think the arc here is Gwen kind of being the sounding board for these two characters. I think Alsatia can more or less be the same. I don't have a problem with that. But I need Leslie to have a moment of at least growing up or not acting like such a weird child. Because if they're going to have a relationship and them possibly having sex or whatever is a part of him becoming a man, I need that to be played completely differently. And I need him to actually show I have an adult somewhere inside mm-hmm. here, just anywhere. So, yeah.
I'll show you where he's got an adult in him. Talk about his dick.
Yeah, I think that Chris made some pretty good points. I should give a little bit of context here. I've been watching this movie since I was a kid, and like, it's really hard for me to divorce elements of the film from other elements of the film. I just kind of take it for what it is. But I think that Chris and Lee both had some really excellent points. I think that from an emotional standpoint, the movie that I would want this movie to resemble the most would be Guardians of the Galaxy. And it needs to have like that heart-wrenching, parent-child relationship that really pays off big at the end. This has no strong emotions right. of that sort. And I think that just like how Peter Quill's mother is kind of there in spirit for a lot of the movie, that Kenneth Zivo needs to be there in spirit for a lot of this movie. But I love a lot of elements of this film, and I do see everybody's criticisms of it, and I think that really Robin Williams wasn't right for this for the lead. I think that I probably would have cast somebody else. I know that the director and Williams had worked together, I think, on Good Morning Vietnam, yeah. So they knew each other. But I think that maybe somebody younger would have been better. It's weird that he looks like he's about 40 and he's still running around making fart noises with things. And like, I think that they could have tempered his like overly comedic zany side with some more better serious moments. The tone where he's talking to Alsatia and putting her to bed. He isn't given an opportunity to express that more dramatic side. And I think that that's, in Williams' performance, you miss out on that because he can hit those beats.
Mm-hmm.
He can do the "Oh Captain, My Captain" stuff from Dead Poets Society and
yeah.
totally sell it. But he's just expected to be so zany in every moment, even if it's inappropriate. And that's really problematic for the film.
I think Robin Williams is a perfect representation of the kind of character this Leslie should have been, which is like a man who has not forgotten how to be a child and how to laugh even when you don't want to laugh.
Right.
And I think that this has been touched upon a little bit, but I don't know what I would switch it out for, because like I said, it's hard for me to like chop this movie up in my brain. The military aspects of the film really kind of take me out of it. They're very grounded in reality, whereas the rest of the film has this really nice surrealism to it. And even though, you know, in the end you have these tiny helicopters and these little tanks with little Darth Vader heads on the top, it's ridiculous. But still, the way that they talk about these tanks and indoctrinating youth and using them, you know, using 5,000 of them at a time to, like, take out the enemy, all that stuff just takes me back down to the political situation on Earth.
Mm.
And I would want a conflict in my ideal version of this movie where, you know, maybe the stakes are high. But, you know, maybe it's not necessarily life-threatening or, you know, there's a madman going around, like, trying to kill his own family. And,
yeah,
it's just a little, it's over the top and too dark for, I think, what I like about the film.
Okay. So I've been working a little bit for the past couple days on how I would do this, and eventually it just ended up with me writing a synopsis for my version of this movie.
So you wrote a treatment.
Yeah,
I did. A spec treatment.
Awesome. So I'm excited for this.
I will take questions at the end. Just as a prelude, the movie, I said this to you guys before.
Sorry, I gotta stop you there.
Yes.
Does it have a dog in it?
Yes.
Okay.
The dog dies. So, as I said to you guys before, the movie, I think, needs a kid as a primary character, not just a bunch of adults who act like children. Also, for me, it's not about the difference between, say, like, zaniness and war. It's the difference between being a kid and being an adult. So, in this version, Leslie is younger. I'm thinking he's probably in his mid-20s. Alsatia is the same age, so she could still be Joan Cusack. So, opens with the Christmas pageant with Leslie playing Santa for children, while Kenneth and Alsatia speak to the character who was formerly General Zevo in the original version. In this version, he is the CEO of the company. He is involved in the company, but he's not directly there necessarily all the time. Alsatia is a nanny who assists with raising Leslie and a younger sister character who is probably about 9 years old. So Leslie has a younger sister in this. Alsatia can be a robot. She doesn't have to be a robot. I don't really care either way. It does not matter to me. Whatever the audience is like, hey, if the test audiences hate the scene where her head pops off, we'll
get
cut
right
that
of
scene
it.
Out. Yeah. So Alsatia is more of a friend to Kenneth and, like, not necessarily a daughter, and so she's an equal to Leslie. He doesn't have a relationship where he feels the need to, like, take care of her. The CEO angles to control the company and make more profitable toys designed for older kids, i.e. more violent toys, per se. After Kenneth dies, he brings his son Patrick in to assist him with this, who is still basically the same character in the original one. The younger sister is drawn into CEO Zevo's testing scheme because Leslie is being too much of an insufferable goofball. Alsatia suspects something's amiss, but Leslie's only focused on toys and making inane statements and not the actual running of the factory. Owens gets fired so we can actually see someone be affected by this crap. Alsatia decides to see what's up, but Leslie just tries to make Owens feel better with his wacky antics. Alsatia swipes one of the guards' key cards and finally convinces Leslie to see what's going on in Zevo's hidden area, and they find the sister, but she refuses to come with them because the CEO, Zevo, has been more supportive of her lately because he's been using her, and as such, she is becoming joyless and dour. So Alsatia and Leslie get trapped. Zevo's very angry. He wants Patrick to toss them off the compound and get rid of them. Patrick has a good relationship with Alsatia in this one still, so he refuses. So Zevo gives them all the boot as the conflicted little sister looks on. Leslie thanks Patrick for sticking up for them, but Patrick says he was just sticking up for Alsatia. Leslie was fine when he was a kid, but he never grew up, and so the two never connected the way he does now with Alsatia. Leslie realizes the mistakes he's made and decides to do right. The three of them and Owen sneak into the compound. Zevo has been waxing about the fun you have as an adult versus the fun you have as a child, like hostile takeovers and punching a man's teeth in during a soccer riot. The sister realizes that this is not someone she wants to be with and tries to escape. She meets the four inside, and they attempt to get Zevo. Zevo has many large versions of the toys he's made, like monster trucks, robots, and fighting ninjas, and he uses them as defense, and the five just have their old toys. They use their smarts and whimsy to win, i.e. tricking the motion-sensitive robots into the dance room where they all get confused by the mirrors and begin attacking each other. The four hold a line of defense on a Manhattan model while Leslie flies the plane through Zevo's window. He refuses to leave, even in defeat, until the sister shows a plan for a toy she designed, and it coincidentally reminds the CEO of his favorite toy as a child, and it melts his heart. In the end, Leslie and Owens take over the running of the factory while Alsatia oversees the CEO and sister in designing toys, and we end on the last Christmas pageant where the CEO plays Santa and everyone looks on happily.
Nice.
Wow, I think that was really good.
Yeah, thank you.
That.
That's what I got.
It was good.
Thank you.
I don't think I have any questions, really.
I was legitimately saying, like, you have to ask questions.
That was really tight.
I had one crazy observation / theory that I just came up with about the movie.
Yeah.
Since we started the fixes that I want to lay out there to see. Because
yeah.
We've talked about off mic how during the end credits, the elephant is, like, in the air.
Yes.
And it's got a very clear, like, crane line. Like, it's being helicoptered away. I mean,
right.
You can even see the helicopter, blades disturbing the grass at one point.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole credit, and you never see a helicopter. You just see the cable. So you're not really you're not really sure if you're like, wait, are you supposed to understand that this is being moved by a helicopter, or are you supposed to think that like the elephant is flying around? I don't know. But now I think I might know.
What?
Because do you remember when Alsatia is going to the memorial? I feel like she says something like she's shouting for her dad. And I feel like she says, like, where are you?
Oh, my God.
So, like, do you think that, like, he designed, like, a sort of roaming memorial? That, like...
No.
Oh, my God.
It's in a different... Because these hills all look the same. So, like, when you see it at the end, is it in the same place that it was?
It flies around.
Yeah. Like, it just is able to, like, sort of fly around that way.
And that Alsatia would be so like, ghoulish.
Dad, I want to warn you, but I can't find you.
Where'd your goddamn monument go?
That would be so ghoulish and unnecessary. Oh, my...
Like,
I would just be like, we need to like forcefully sterilize the Zevos. This has to stop.
The reign of terror must end.
I just feel like that could have been a thing that maybe they were trying to imply. I don't know. I kind of want to watch that scene again after this.
Okay. It's been a long
time. Would you recommend toys to anyone?
With the caveat that if you like Robin Williams, then yes. If you don't like Robin Williams, there's no way in hell you'll
ever
want to
see this movie. It's the worst side of Robin Williams.
My thing is this. Like, there are parts of the movie I like, but I generally find it to be hard to follow and hard to pay attention to, so I would
get the soundtrack.
By the opposite, dude, flip the coin. If you love Joan Cusack, this has got to be on your list.
Yes.
This is like top five Joan Cusack movies.
If you're looking to cut a best of Joan Cusack reel for YouTube.
Number one, toys. Yeah. Number two, Gross Point Blank.
Yeah.
Number three, High Fidelity.
Number four, Perks of Being Wallflower.
Oh, excellent. Yes.
Anyway.
Do you know I spent that entire movie wondering where she had been and if I had missed her? She didn't show up until like the last 5 minutes. And I saw her name in the opening credits. I was like, oh, she's in this. And I was sitting there like, was she the aunt? Was she his mother? Like, am I missing something?
And then she came.
Okay, I have experiences showing this movie to people that didn't know about it because I didn't know that it was like a weird or bad movie for a long time. And so I would say read the plot summary before you get into it. And know that there are some great elements to it, but also understand that it has a lot of shortcomings and it's deeply flawed.
Did you have movie wreck regret?
I would say that I've had that wreck.
I had that with Cool as Ice. I wrote about it. I'll put it on Dropbox sometime. I wrote all about my movie wreck regret.
Yeah, I showed a friend of mine. I was like, oh, you've never seen Toys? Like it's a Christmas movie. It's a pretty good one. Like we should go check it out.
Yeah.
And he was just like, what? He was not into it at
it's
all.
It's barely a Christmas movie.
It takes place around Christmas.
It opens and closes.
If we're going to watch Kiss Kiss Bang Bang because it happens around Christmas, then we also get to watch
Well, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang takes entirely at Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so does
also,
Toys.
Also, you know what else?
Takes place because it opens and closes at Christmas. I don't know how much time is passing in between the two.
I guess.
So you got to be like a year, right?
Yeah, but like what I'm saying is like, it's not like does this all happen in like January and then we fast
forward.
Oh, and then
Die Hard.
Okay.
I don't like Die Hard.
I love Die Hard.
Well, good for you. And on that note.
Live for your Die Hard.
Save that for next time.
Die Hard. I know it's a terrible one. Are we gonna do maybe a closing of the bye?
A closing of the bye.
Well, if we cannot bring you comfort, then at least we bring you hope.
Yeah.
This has been a long week.
Yeah. This has been a super long week.
So let's bring you hope.
All right.
Bye.
This is discordant.
Yeah, I know. I love my dad. He loves his job.